This Jim Mora Jr. and NFL Rookie of the Year Prop Bets edition of the Sports Gambling Podcast is presented by MyBookie.ag. The UFC is back. International soccer is back. Golf is back. Plus, they got tons of sports sims to bet on. Use the promo code SGP for up to $1,000 in bonus bets. That's MyBookie.ag. Promo code SGP to play, win, and get paid. We're also brought to you by Ace Per Head. Ace is the leader in pay per head providers, and they make it super easy to start your own sportsbook. Plus, Ace is offering up to 6 weeks free over at aceperhead.com/SGP. That's aceperhead.com/SGP. Finally, we're brought to you by Cushy Dreams. Cushy Dreams is a new company with a full lineup of premium smokable CBD, now shipping legally to all 50 states. And if you use the promo code SGP, you get 15% off. That's KUSHYDreams.com, promo code SGP.
You're listening to the Sports Gambling Podcast, exclusively on SGPN. Let it ride.
Welcome everyone to the Sports Gambling Podcast. I'm Sean, stacking them on the green with my partner in picks, Ryan Real Money Kramer. What's happening, Kramer Dog?
Hey, Sean, how's it hanging?
It's hanging great. And you know, third guy in the booth, always hanging with us, Colby Dan, aka the Danta Base.
Feels like he's here a lot lately.
I mean, why? We're supposed to be quarantined, right?
We are. We're quarantined here in the SGP studio, cranking out tons of content.
We haven't left in months.
We just wrapped up Madden Mayhem and of course our Madden Simulation Tournament. That was awesome. And thanks to everyone who watched it and submitted a bracket. Of course, if you're one of the bracket winners, either the 32 team bracket or the 16 team bracket, make sure you go to sportsgamblingpodcast.com/Madden. Fill out your little claim sheet to get your prize, and then you'll be hooked up with the mybookie.ag credits.
Yeah, and for those who have already submitted if you're listening to this and already submitted a claim by like Wednesday, the 27th morning, we've already sent that over to the first batch are heading over to mybookie tonight, May 26th. So you might already have your free credit. You might already have it. You might not. If not, fill out that claim. I feel like an insurance company. We got Flo on the desk.
Flo managing from Progressive, the claims, handling all the claims. And yeah, what's good? We got Jim Mora Jr. on, a legendary coach. Fun interview. Hit on a bunch of stuff. Talking a little Michael Vick.
Yeah.
And a couple other surprises. Talk some college football. Great analyst for ESPN.
The good inception dude. I pulled on this podcast to just get this Virginia Tech vein pumping.
He did beat Virginia Tech in the bowl game. In the
Sun
Bowl.
Yes, he did. Yes, he did.
And of course,
these are the dark years, sir.
Kramer did manage to crowbar a mention of him getting up to number two in the nation in playing Madden football.
I had to throw it there.
I'm going to pull back the curtain. So Sean and Colby, I'll be honest, generally do most of my prep for these interviews, plus Wikipedia. Those are my general sources. But for this one, I knew that I was going to go right to the thanking him for the Madden well, because I like to talk about the fact that I was number two in the country.
Were you hoping he was maybe going to hire you on his next staff?
Listen to the interview, but Jesus, Colby.
Yes. He's one of those guys I'm who definitely will get penetration.
He's already texting me wanting to know what plays I like
what
to run.
What kind of playbook did you run?
He did text me that he thinks you're a sim god.
Hashtag.
There's plenty of sim god action over at mybookie.ag, the presenting sponsor of the Sports Gambling Podcast. It's a sim bonanza over there. The Madden sims keep on going, NBA sims, and of course, real sports are happening. UFC, the NHL just announced a 24 team playoff, and I'm
all about it.
I'm getting back into the NHL just for this. It's gonna be awesome. And of course, NBA should be making an announcement any day now about their playoffs. Sports are coming back in a big way. Head over to mybookie.ag. Use the promo code SGP. And after the Jim Mora Jr. interview, you're going to want to stay tuned because we break down our give out some picks for NFL Rookie of the Year, both offensive and defensive. And we get those odds right from the odds gods themselves. MyBookie.ag. Use that promo code SGP to play, win, and most importantly, get paid. Joining us on the line, legendary football coach and ESPN analyst, Jim Mora. Jim, how's it going?
It is going very well. How are you guys doing?
Doing great.
Surviving the isolation, you know?
Well, sounds like it's almost over.
Yeah, that's great news. And it does look like sports are coming back and hopefully in a big way coming up this fall. I know we're chomping at the bit to watch sports and get back into it, get back into football. Are you using this time? Are you catching up on any game film? What have you been watching lately?
Well, you know what? I probably like everybody else just searching for, you know, entertainment. Watched a lot of, the ESPN classics. They've done a really nice job, I think, of providing content for people. And you kind of go back in history. Loved watching The Last Dance with my four kids and introducing them to Michael Jordan, which further fueled the debate of, you know, the greatest of all time because they'd never watched him. My 17-year-old actually goes, you know what, Dad, I think he's the best ever. So that was kind of fun. And then, just staying in touch with friends that are in the business and seeing what they're doing. It was fun to kind of track the draft from a different perspective this year. You know, I've been at the draft the last several years as a coach or as an analyst, and to sit at home and kind of go into the living rooms of all these players, as well as the decision makers at the NFL teams, was, I thought, a lot of fun. So I've been busy.
Now, coach, we just had a June Jones on, and he was very reluctant. He thinks the NFL will happen, but he was reluctant to think that high school and college are going to happen this fall. How do you feel about that?
Well, I think the NFL will go forward. I think they will definitely play games. I'm not sure what they will do with regard to fans in the stands. I'm sure there will be some fans in the stands to begin with, and more as we go along, as long as we're trending downward with regards to this pandemic. But they can do that. You know, these are professional players. They're men, they're adults. It's a business. College is a little bit different. You know, there are rules in place, and, you know, we know that students need to be on campus before athletes can be on campus practicing or participating in games, that is. So I'm probably a little bit more reluctant to say that college will go on, but I believe in my heart that they will find a way to make a season happen. It may not be the season that we are used to seeing traditionally with regards to the number of games and the bowls and things like that, but I do believe that there'll be a college football season. And then I think high school is probably where you'll see the biggest change. You know, I've heard, at least in my area here in California, that there's talk that they'll push the football season to the spring, which I think is difficult. I think it hampers some people. I think that there'll be some kids that are early admits to college that will, you know, flat out miss their senior season. I think it'll hamper recruiting to a certain extent. But I think the most important thing is that we follow, you know, the guidelines put in place by the experts, and along with doing that we hopefully can provide these youngsters a chance to participate and their parents a chance to watch them and fans a chance to cheer again. I think we need sports.
Couldn't agree more. And as far as yourself getting back into it, your last tenure there was UCLA, currently college, your record 46-30 in college. Do you have any plans to try and get back in the mix coaching college or maybe back in the pros? Where are you at kind of with that?
Well, I'll tell you this. I've enjoyed the last couple of years at ESPN, and they provided me a tremendous opportunity to, you know, stay close to the game, talk about the game, study the game. I had a lot of time to watch film. I sit there every Saturday and watch, you know, games from noon till midnight on the East Coast, and there's, you know, 12 monitors in front of me, so I'm seeing a lot of football.
Sounds like our garage.
Yeah, it's not a bad deal, really. It's, you know, it's a man cave, and every 10 minutes or every hour for 10 minutes, you go and talk a little football. So it's kind of a dream job. But I love to coach, and I love to coach college. And you know, I'd relish the opportunity to go back and run a program. I think I've had success and, you know, at every level I've been at, and, you know, obviously failures, which you learn from, I think I've learned a lot and I'm ready to go again. But it has to be the right opportunity. And, I hope that that does come along. I sincerely do. And if it doesn't, then I'll pour my heart, continue to pour my heart into the broadcast end of it.
Well, real quick, Sean, I heard you talk about the right opportunity, coach. And I want to take you in the time machine real quick. Was there an opportunity that you've already had in your career that you look back on and you say, wow, that was the right mix of things. And we were really close, but there was just that one thing missing.
Yeah. I've had a couple, opportunities that I've passed up, that in retrospect, I've said to myself many times, why didn't I take that job? But then I give it more thought, and I can come up with the reasons I didn't take a job. You know, when I was at UCLA, I was offered more than one college job and more than one NFL job as a head coach. But, you know, I had an obligation I felt to not only the school, UCLA, but to the young men that I had recruited and their families who I had told I'd be at UCLA. And I didn't feel like I could, you know, on one hand, stand in front of a team and talk about being selfless and talk about sacrifice and commitment and playing for each other. And then talk to them about the other life lessons that I tried to instill with them, you know, as their coach, and then walk in one day and say, guess what? I have this opportunity to go to this school. They're going to pay me more money. I think it's a better opportunity for me. Hey, see you later. Because I felt like I'd be letting them down, their families down. I think then the next time a man, you know, in a position of coach stood in front of him and said, okay, these are the things we need to do as a team. These are the types of teammates you need to be to each other. You don't want to be self-serving. You know, you got to have commitment that they go, yeah, we've heard this BS before. And it was that more guy and he just left us. So as I look back, there is some regret that I didn't make some of these moves because I think they could have enhanced my career, but I also think that I made the right decision to stay, you know, because I felt like I owed that to the players, to their families, and to my family as well.
I completely agree. And I think too many times you saw it, not to throw Mel Tucker under the bus, but in somewhat of the way here, Mel Tucker is a guy who, you know, reiterated or first, you know, when Michigan State was going to hire him from Colorado, or they were trying to hire him, he said, no, I'm staying here in Boulder. And then on Twitter, somehow he posted, or University of Colorado posted him on phone calls telling the kids, hey, you know, you right. Sign here, I'm committed to you. And then sure enough, he leaves. And it was just a really ugly scene, I thought, for college football and for Colorado specifically, in Michigan State, I guess. But I agree that there's a middle ground there that you have to find, but that one really left a bad taste in my mouth.
Is there anything you think that can be done, like either regulation, sort of guidelines, anything? Because really, these coaches' contracts appear to just
accountability.
Yeah, there's just nothing really actually holding them. Should maybe coaches be subject to the same, you know, kind of transfer portal that they make players go through? Is that a possible solution?
I don't think that would work. I think that you know, the buyouts that colleges are putting in contracts so that it makes it harder for a team to hire a coach. Although if a team, a school has enough money, they'll go ahead and buy a guy out. I think it's really complicated because I don't know that we should ever behoove a man for, you know, pursuing his dreams, but I also feel like when you make a commitment to kids and their families, you need to honor it. It's life lessons that you're teaching them. And that's one of the things that you do as a college football coach. I think everybody has different motivations for why they coach. You know, I think some of them, you know, I think for Mel, he had his reasons for wanting to go to Michigan State. And, you know, I think people will go, yeah, he was getting paid a lot more money, but I think there's probably something deeper than that. I really do. I think there is something deeper than that. You know, and I don't begrudge him taking that job. For me personally, what was more important than anything was being somewhere where I felt valued and I felt like I was adding value and then staying there, you know, and you make enough money when you're a college football coach. And if you were given an opportunity and put in a position and supported so that you could succeed as a head coach, then you have no reason necessarily, in my opinion, to leave. Now, if the school's not supporting you, if you're not being provided some of the resources that you need to win at the highest level, or, you know, people aren't being truthful for you, or there are other circumstances that arise. And I think, you know, I guess you have to have a little bit of selfishness, but it's a tough call because these kids are, you know, held to such a high standard, and then a coach just bails, you know, I don't know what the answer is. I really don't, other than if a coach leaves, the kids can all leave, but that's not always easy. You know, there's only a certain percentage of the kids that are wanted elsewhere. They all can't just leave.
So, yeah.
It's a hard deal. You know, it's a complicated situation.
Well, between the pros and the NFL, you've really coached a number of dynamic players. I know me and my co-host here, Ryan, we're both big fans of Michael Vick. What was it like watching Vick in person and just seeing that kind of athleticism?
Yeah, you're right. I've been fortunate. So I have in my NFL career, I've been affiliated or coached or worked with, I believe, either 28 or 30 members of the Pro Football Hall of Fame. So I've seen a lot of great ones. I would say that Michael is in the top five athletes that I've ever coached or seen play in any sport. I mean, he was that dynamic, and I'm not going to say he's the very best, because I don't think I could pick a very best. I think it'd be unfair to the others that I coached or I've watched to pick a very best, but he was certainly in the top five. And there wasn't a day that went by, whether it would be practice or a game, where you just wouldn't go, "Oh my God, did he just do that? I can't believe he just did that." You know, he had incredible arm strength with a flick of the wrist. He could just throw a beautiful ball. He had that, you know, explosiveness and speed. He was tough as nails. He was fun to be around. He enjoyed the game. You know, he went through some terrible times, and he made some horrible decisions. And he paid for him. And I believe that he's come out a much, much, much better person, much better man than he went into this whole thing with. And so I applaud him for that. And I know there's people out there that still, you know, have issues with him because of what he did, but he paid his debt to society. He repented. He's continually tried to make up for the mistakes. He acknowledged them. And, he's a good man. Mike Vick's he's a good man. I know this. My kids always loved being around Mike Vick, and this is when they were young. And I always used to say that I would let Mike babysit my kids back in those days. And, you know, I haven't changed in terms of that, but boy, was he fun to, he was so fun to watch, man. And now I had to play against him too. He was not fun to play against. He was fun to have on your team.
Not fun to scheme up against. Do you think his supreme,
oh my God,
do you think his supreme athleticism in a way kind of was a detriment to him, at least early in his career, because he was just so physically gifted that maybe he didn't put in the time learning the plays, the mental aspect of being a quarterback in the National Football League. He didn't need to be as dedicated to that. And maybe he short-sighted himself there.
I think that there's something to be said about that. I think that he's not the only one that's happened to. Playing quarterback in the NFL is very, very unique. The level of commitment that you have to have to your craft 12 months out of the year is really unique. You know, you have to understand what all other 21 players on the field are doing, not just the other 10 on your side, but the 11 on the other side of the ball. You have to do a tremendous amount of off-season work to get yourself mentally and physically prepared. You have to watch hours and hours worth of film. You have to ask questions. You have to spend extra time in meetings. It's, you know, there are some positions where you can go to work at the start of the day. You can put the work in, you can go home and, you know, turn on the TV and decompress and you'll still be ready to play on Sunday. Quarterback in the NFL is not that. You have to be supremely dedicated to it. And when you're a man like Mike, who has this God-given ability to make plays in the open field with his legs, you know, there may have been, and, you know, I let Mike speak for himself on this, but there may have been times when he said, you know what, I'm okay, I've got enough. And if I get in trouble, I can just take off and go, and they won't be able to catch me, you know? And I think, though, that as he went through his career, then he learned how to study. He learned the importance of values of studying. Maybe his skill set declined a little bit in terms of his physical ability, that he did increase his attempts to really understand the game, you know, and I think that you did a really nice job in Philadelphia of accelerating as an intellectual player rather than just an intellectual athletic player.
And now looking, you know, 10 to 20 years in the past, he's turned into almost like someone who's going to be remembered as the person who brought the NFL forward. He's the godfather for Lamar Jackson, for these mobile quarterbacks who he essentially was the guy, Randall Cunningham before him. You can find data points along the history of the NFL lineage, but as far as the guy who will be remembered because this crop of current quarterbacks credits him as the guy who paved the way. So yeah, it was super fun to watch. Yeah. I was a Virginia Tech grad. So coming out of college, getting to watch him play in the pros with you and that Falcons team was exciting because I remember in the moment, there were a lot of people who were like, he can't do it at the NFL. He's not fast enough to be like that at the NFL. He's got to be able to throw. And as someone who watched him in person, whatever you say about his athletic ability, I've never seen someone throw a football harder or further than him. So he had all of it, you know?
And he had a quick release. And you know what? Here's the misnomer is that, unfortunately in our society, there's some built-in stereotypes and assumptions. And sometimes the assumption is that a mobile quarterback can't throw. Well, you know, I think that Mike was a guy that played quarterback and had the ability to run, not a running quarterback. I think that, you know, like we look at Lamar, oh, he's a running quarterback. I would dispute that. I would say, no, he's a quarterback. He can play the quarterback position, but he can run. And to me, there's a real distinction there. You know, Lamar Jackson can drop back. He can read a defense. He can understand where to throw it. He can throw it on time and with accuracy. But he can also make tremendous plays with his legs. Mike Vick could drop back. He could look around. He could digest the defense. And as he got better, and as he went through the, you know, his career, he got better at that. And he could make the throws he made to make. But he could also get out of there. Now, there's some quarterbacks that are strictly more mobile quarterbacks. They're guys that can run and are average throwers. You know, Mike was a quarterback that can run. Mahomes is a quarterback that can run. You know, we already said Lamar, he can play quarterback, but he's got the added element of running. So to me, it's just kind of twisting that whole philosophy on its head, or that whole, you know, this notion that we have that a running quarterback isn't a thrower.
Yeah, I mean,
does that make sense at all?
No, totally. And if you think Michael Vick isn't a thrower, just cue up that Monday Night Football game against the Redskins, where he's playing for the Eagles. I mean, that ball to DeSean Jackson, that's one of the greatest throws I've ever seen a quarterback make. Obviously, I'm completely biased because I am an Eagles fan. And I'd be remiss if I didn't talk a little bit about the 2004 NFC Championship game. Do you think?
Oh, God, that was a tough one.
Sorry to bring up old wounds, but do you think as a dome team inherently in the playoffs going outdoors, is that a big disadvantage? I know everyone likes to throw that in, or even when handicapping games and go, oh, dome team outdoors. Do you think there's actually something to that?
If there is, there shouldn't be. At that level, at the NFL level, where these are paid professionals and they're men that have come from every environment that you can think of, hot weather, cold weather, you know, I mean, there should be enough mental toughness and discipline to be able to handle that environment, whether you're a dome team or you're not a dome team. That's what I believe. I don't think you can ever use that excuse. And we never used that excuse in that game. I mean, it was frigid day. I mean, it was really cold. But that wasn't why the Philadelphia Eagles won that game. They won that game because, you know, they played better than us. They coached better than us. I felt going in at halftime that we were right there with them. I thought that, you know, if we could come out in the second half and put something together quickly, that, you know, we could really make it close. And we weren't able to. I think we came out with an interception. They scored, and it just kind of from there, we were just really in catch up mode. To be quite frank with you, I have never gone and watched the game film nor a replay of that game, never in my life. So it's been what, 16 years? I've never seen that game again. So the only thing I say is just kind of from memory of standing on the sidelines. I think I have PTSD from that game because I can't turn it on. Well, watch it.
You and LJ Crumpler, because that hit he took from Brian Dawkins, that is That's almost from another era of football where they kind of let that go.
Doc was awesome, man. I loved him. I coached him in the Pro Bowl. What a man. What a complete and
just a class act.
And I'm sure Coach would be excited to hear this too, but I used his Atlanta Falcons team to fuel my number two ranking on Xbox Live in Madden that year. So everything is coming full circle for me.
We had a good team, man.
Oh man, Crumpler was so dynamic.
There was a viral video. I don't know if you saw this of Adam Gase doing some smelling salts on the sideline of a game. And I looked it up on the internet, and I think there's a clip of you Monday Night Football doing a little smelling salt before a game or during a game. We did them in studio. I mean, it's quite a rush. Are you doing it just to kind of get pumped up? Is there a mental thing? Is it just kind of like the players are doing it? You want to be one of the guys? Like what's the mindset there?
It's really funny. It started when I was with the San Francisco 49ers, and in the locker room, the guys would, you know, they do the smelling salts. They put a bunch of smelling salts in like a Gatorade bottle and then just spray it in someone's nose, a hit of it. And you know, guys would just walk up and do it to each other, and I'd do it. And then, you know, before a game, it was for me more ritualistic than anything. You know, I'd snap it, and I'd always have one in my pocket for halftime and one right before the game, and I'd pop it and I'd take a hit, and there'd be a couple players that come up and, you know, they'd take a hit off it. It's just ammonia. And it was more of like a pregame ritual to get your mind exactly where you wanted it to be than anything else. You know, I mean, it has no lasting effect unless you're coming off of, you know, taking a pretty subsequent hit, which I don't even know if they use it anymore at all. But I got caught on TV using, I think John Madden made, you know, a little bit of hay out of it. But we all have these rituals, you know, like I know this when I stopped using the smelling salts, because you're not going to do that in college. It was like, okay, I need to find this player at this yard with 30 seconds left, you know, before kickoff. And we have to do a special handshake, and you have about four or five of those. And if you didn't do it, you know, you're like, oh my God, we're in trouble. It's like that NFC game, the 2004 NFC championship game. I always talk to the team right before we leave the locker room at halftime and just give them some final thoughts. And the officials came in the locker room and I couldn't get to them in time. And they started to bring the team on the field. And I never got to talk to the team before the start of the second half. And for 16 years, I've gone, oh my God, that's why we lost.
Oh no.
I didn't get to talk to the players before we went out, which is, you know, it's ludicrous, but it makes sense to me.
We completely understand.
The power of belief, Coach. We understand.
Yeah, and as a Philadelphia Eagles fan, I'm obsessed with Juju and the right. You know, my life is a scene out of Silver Linings Playbook, so I totally get it where you have these rituals. You got to have the remotes in the right spot, and if anything gets, you know, messed up, you're blaming yourself. You go, I could have done more.
I used to have a deal where if I wore a suit to a game, and we lost that game, like the suit tie combination, I could never wear it again.
I get it.
Well, they make fun of me sometimes because I'm the same way with the jersey. If the team's down, I have backup jerseys that I have to swap out and then hopefully smooth things.
Well, that begs the question. Do you have a backup tie? Have you ever made the switch at halftime?
My first year at UCLA, I had a pair of socks that I wore for every game. And, 1 week we forgot them, and we played at the Rose Bowl, and one of the assistant equipment managers knew how, you know, what a nutcase I was about the pair of socks. And before the game, he drove all the way back to campus just to get this. And they were little footies, to get these little footies so I could wear them.
Oh man.
And if you live in LA, you know, driving from the Rose Bowl to the West Side is that's a hike.
It's going
to
be an hour and a half with traffic. Talking about your days at UCLA and the pros, You're a rare breed when it comes to defense. You've coached both the 3-4 and the 4-3. A lot of times coaches are pretty stubborn and just lock into one system for their entire life. Kind of just walk us through the decision to go with either the 3-4 or the 4-3 and why you were open to change.
Well, I think what most coaches can tell you is that they've been exposed to both, and they probably have an expertise in one or the other. But I think one of the most important things you can do is fit your scheme to your personnel. The job of the coach is to accentuate the talents of his players and put them in a position to have success. And so asking someone to do something that they're, you know, not physically capable of doing is not good coaching. So, you know, when I came to UCLA, we were a 3-4 team, and we had Anthony Barr on the outside, and we had Eric Kendricks and Jordan Zumwalt on the inside, and Damian Holmes on the other side opposite Anthony. And the key was, you know, to get Anthony Barr when we could in a position to be blocked by a running back because we felt that was a mismatch, or get him working in space and pass coverage or covering a tight end because those are the things he did well. He had that length, and Eric Kendricks was a sideline to sideline inside linebacker. But as the profiles of our players changed a little bit, we became more of a 4-3 team that used some 3-4 principles. So, you know, I think if you watch a lot of NFL teams, you're going to see some 3-4 and some 4-3 principles sprinkled throughout their scheme. When you watch the Patriots, you know, you're going to see a good bit of both depending upon who they're playing. The key to having success, I think, is being able to match your scheme to your personnel initially, and then maybe in the draft, your personnel to your scheme. But in college, you have to have some flexibility because, you know, you recruit these players and their bodies change. You know, they you start recruiting a kid when he's 15, 16, by the time he's 18, he might have grown 4 inches and arms are longer, and he's, you know, he's a different player than he was you envisioned him being in high school.
Well, you talk about college and personnel there. You actually walked on as a defensive back at Washington, and that was when they had a really good program, made it to 2 Rose Bowls. Did you have some sort of affinity? Did you have a special spot for fellow walk-ons? Did you kind of keep an eye on them? What was your take on? Yeah.
I valued him. I really valued him. You know, as you said, so I was a pretty good high school player, got hurt my senior year, and some of my scholarship offers dried up. Washington never really offered me, but they gave me, you know, I actually earned a scholarship the spring of my freshman year. But, you know, being a walk-on is not easy. You know, every coach will tell you we treat everyone the same and everyone's going to get an opportunity, but I just don't think that's necessarily the truth. I think that as a walk-on, you have to prove yourself for a longer period of time at a deeper level than you do if you're a scholarship guy. You just don't get as many opportunities. You come off the field, your locker room sometimes is different, your equipment's not as new, or, you know, they don't always know your name. You're not paid as much attention in meetings, and that's unfortunate. And to me, having gone through that, it was just important that walk-ons in our program, as long as they showed the commitment to the program that was expected of everybody, should be treated like everybody else, should be given opportunities. You know, I couldn't wait for those chances to give walk-ons scholarships. We ended up with, you know, more scholarships available than we thought we would. There was nothing more fun than awarding a scholarship to a walk-on who had earned it, who deserved it. It was very rewarding, and, you know, I knew how they felt. So that's how I treated them.
Awesome. Awesome. Coach, we brought up the 2004 NFC championship, which was a bad thing. What about, let's go good on you here. Texas A&M Rose Bowl with Josh Rosen. One of the best comebacks, one of the best college football games I can ever recall watching. Walk me through that experience and how awesome that was to be on the sideline and be a part of that team coming back from that big deficit to grab that win.
It's so funny. When ESPN was showing all those broadcasts, at the start of this quarantine, 2 weeks in a row, they showed games I coached in. They showed the Texas A&M game, and then they showed the Monday Night Football Falcons Saints game reopening of the dome, which I was the head coach of the Falcons for. So I actually watched a little bit of both of those and relived them. I don't really go back and watch a lot of games I played in, but that A&M game was a wild one. And I can tell you that running off the field at halftime, I was dumbfounded by what was happening. I didn't see that coming at all. Maybe we were tight. I don't know what it was. I don't know, but I know in the second half we relaxed. Josh Rosen took over. Our receivers started making tremendous plays down the field. Our backs started, you know, breaking tackles and making yards. Our offensive line gelled a little bit. And, you know, sometimes when you're way ahead, like A&M was, there's a natural little letdown. And when the other team can capitalize on that letdown and grab momentum, it is really difficult if you're like an A&M to get it going again. You know, you've kind of shut it down emotionally, and then you're supposed to pick it back up against the team that's all of a sudden got great momentum, and it's hard to do. I had another situation like that in the NFL in a playoff game versus the New York Giants. I don't even remember when Trey Junkin rolled that snap back and they missed a field goal in Candlestick, and so we advanced. But we were down at half, I think, I don't know, we might have been down 28-7 or 35-7. Well, you're down 28-7 in an NFL game, the chance of you coming back are almost nil, and especially in a playoff game. We came back and we won it, and it was just like, how did we do that? How did we get the momentum? You know, and it was Jeff Garcia just making great plays,
Coach, T.O.
making great plays.
I still have
nightmares
as a Giants. I still have nightmares of that occasion. Momentum is very real. Like that, by the time the fourth quarter was starting, I was very, very certain the Giants were losing that game.
You know, I'm looking at a picture of me walking off the field after that game right now. So, and I can see the scoreboard. So at the end of the first quarter, it was 7-7. At the end of the second quarter, it was 28-14 at half. And then you guys scored 10 more. So it was 38-14. And then we came back and scored 25 straight and won 39-38. It was third and five with 23 seconds left on the 23 yard line when that play happened.
Yeah, I mean, bananas. Yeah.
Now your dad was also a legendary coach. You got coaching in your veins. After a game like that or any sort of big game, does your dad send you a text? Does he give you a call and maybe either congratulate you, give you some pointers, kind of give you a little backseat driving on your coaching at all?
We always had a routine that after a game, win or lose, he was pretty gentle with me. You know, he was supportive. You know, if we won, great game. If we lost, hey, tough loss. I know you guys played hard. Hang in there. But he always had access to my game film, no matter when I was coaching, where I was coaching. And so invariably the next 2 days he would spend studying the game. And then usually on a Tuesday or Wednesday, I'd get the phone call where we were going to recap what he saw in the game. And most of the times it was positive stuff, but there were some times, man, where he was tough on me. You know, hey, listen, you talk about guys hustling to the ball and tackling. I see guys loafing. I see guys not wrapping up.
Lollygagging.
You know, and why didn't you play this guy more? And, you know, what were you thinking here? And being, really, I appreciated it because I knew it was coming from a really good place. But it wasn't always easy to hear, you know. And he was usually right. You know, he's usually right. He's had a lot of wins, watched a lot of football. I think he's won 185 games as a pro head coach, and actually just turned 85 on Sunday. So yeah, that's celebrate.
Well, happy birthday! Please send our happy birthday to him. Happy belated.
Now your dad also had some legendary press conferences. Everyone's seen the viral video of him going playoffs. Do you ever find yourself quoting your dad or doing the impression to your dad?
Not too much. You know, I'll tell you something interesting about that day. And people don't really know this is that I was a defensive coordinator for the 49ers. We went into Indy and we beat them that day.
We picked off
Peyton three times and ran one or two back for touchdowns. We had a couple fumble recovery. We played great on defense. We played great on offense and we beat them. And I could tell when I shook his hand kind of at midfield going off the field that, you know, something was, he was going to pop a little bit, you know. He was an emotional guy. He wore his emotions on his sleeve. He was very honest. And so when that happened, you know, I didn't really hear about it till we were on the bus headed to the airport. But that was really weird for me because I know what the game means to our family. It's been our family's lifeblood since the day I was born. And it's the only way we've ever, you know, been able to support ourselves is through football. And I know what it was like for my dad when he'd lose a game. And so then to be kind of, you know, the guy that beat him, and then have you see him have, you know, that reaction afterwards, it was kind of tough.
Yeah.
But I will tell you this, as a little bit of a, you know, we played professionally 3 times and I'm 2-1. So I got that going.
I would definitely bring that up to my old man. Before we let you go, Jim, I know you, can you explain to people the work you do with the Count On Me Foundation?
Well, my family's always been pretty philanthropically oriented, and the Count On Me Foundation was started in 2004 to help children in need and at risk. And it operates in still in Georgia, still in the state of Washington, still in the state of California. What's really been fun for me is to see my kids kind of adopt a philanthropic attitude. My oldest son is 25 when this, you know, the COVID-19 kind of started to really to inflame, was able to raise, I think, $150,000 with his friends through a fundraising effort and bring the N95 masks to medical workers in LA. My daughter, every Saturday and Sunday, for the last 2 months or so, has spent the day delivering food to healthcare workers. And then my 21-year-old son started a clothing brand, The Surfer, and all proceeds have gone to people in the inner city. I called him Friday night and say, "What are you doing, pal?" He goes, "Well, I'm just out. I'm delivering food." And I go, "What do you mean you're delivering food?" He goes, "Well, every Friday lately, I've been going to the grocery store for elderly people that can't go out and shopping for them and taking them their food." And I'm like, "Oh my God." So, you know, I think that it's just really more than anything an opportunity to give back to people and also teach our kids the value of serving. So happy about it.
Well, that's awesome, Jim.
Yeah, awesome stuff, man.
And appreciate you calling in and giving us your time. Great to talk a little football here. Make sure you give Jim a follow on Twitter, Jim_MoraFB, and make sure you check out all his work with ESPN. Thanks again, Jim.
Hey, I really enjoyed it. You guys have a wonderful day, okay?
Awesome time talking to Jim Mora Jr. Love that little smelling salt nugget. That was great. Him talking about all the rituals as an NFL coach. It's good to know they have the same rituals. You know what my ritual is? Starting my own business over at aceperhead.com/SGP. That's right. You can create your own online sportsbook. I know what you're saying, Sean. I don't know anything about starting my own online sportsbook. Don't worry. All you need to know is the Sports Gambling Podcast, because we have a hookup over at aceperhead.com/SGP. They'll get you set up, live betting, and amazing. It's an amazing mobile experience. Pretty easy to get going. Real turnkey operation. Plus, if you use our link, aceperhead.com/SGP. Get up to 6 weeks free. That's a heck of a deal and perfect time to get your sports book going as sports are coming back and they're right around the corner. Before we get into offensive and defensive rookie of the year, got to talk about Cushy Dreams CBD. That's right. The new smokable CBD gets you those awesome CBD rich hemp flower or the CBD pre-roll joints. And these are legit pre-rolls, highly smokable, tastes like marijuana, feels like marijuana, tastes great though, but it's doesn't get you high like traditional marijuana. Cause it's that CBD relief. I enjoy the creative pre-roll. Kramer, what do you like over
peace,
at
Peace, baby?
You're a peace guy.
Peace and love, peace and
peace
love.
And love CBD content up to 20%. That's kind of, I mean, want to talk about sim gods. These are CBD gods. All you got to do is head over to cushydreams.com. Use that promo code SGP. That's KUSHY dreams.com. Promo code SGP. Get 15% off. Smoke your CBD because you can. Awesome. Awesome interview. Like I said, just a second ago, Jim Mora Jr. That was a lot of fun. And the NFL, it's happening. The NFL is going to happen in the fall. Knock on wood. I still feel like we can, don't want to jinx it, but I think it would be awesome to just, even though a few months away already getting some of these season long prop bets in. And of course, Colby Colby knows the college world, so I thought it'd be fun to take a crack at some of the early ones, talking offensive and defensive rookie of the years. Kramer, offensive rookie of the year. Who you leaning? And
wait,
why?
Wait a second. You're gonna make me go first?
Yeah.
God damn it, Sean. All right. Well, I mean, I've been on this for a while now. I do think Tua could be something special, and this Miami team showed enough last year and showed me enough in Madden Mayhem to think that with this division, with that roster, with more importantly that coach, and with a quarterback who I believe has the highest ceiling of this year's crop.
No.
I think if you're looking at who wins rookie of the years, who is it? Running backs and quarterbacks.
And even running backs, you have to have a really good year, because Josh Jacobs had a really good year, Miles Sanders had a really good year, and yet Kyler Murray still got the hardware there, because he's a quarterback, and Kyler Murray had a good year, but it wasn't, no one's ever going to look back and remember Kyler Murray's legendary rookie year. Even though, and maybe people are going to give me shit about this, even though I'm not huge on Tua long-term as a quarterback, I'm also taking Tua plus 900, and I'm on the same page as Kramer. I like the system in Miami. I like the fact that everyone's playing for Flores. I think they've done a good job of restocking that roster. And we've seen it so many times, even with Kyler Murray, a rookie quarterback who can run around. We talked about it with Michael Vick, a rookie quarterback who can run around. They can win some games they shouldn't, right? Cause they don't have tape on them. They make some plays with their legs. They end up winning a couple games that they probably shouldn't. And you're in an AFC East, no Tom Brady. If the Dolphins win the division, Tua is going to get rookie of the year, or even if the Dolphins get into the playoffs,
that's not going to happen.
Well, wait a second. Wait a second, real quick.
Get because out of here.
Sean, who do you got winning
on,
the AFC?
Hold on,
right now,
Colby.
I got the Patriots.
Okay.
Oh, look at you. You got so excited to hear me say Tua, the same guy that you picked, Sean, that you didn't even let me finish my point. What I was going to say is that's the guy I would take with the conventional wisdom. But my play for offensive rookie of the year is based on something that I know to be true. Carson Wentz is not a franchise quarterback.
I was about to say, you got to sprinkle some on that, right?
Carson Wentz goes down in the first quarter of the season. Jalen Hurts comes in. Eagles
to the playoffs.
Win the division. Giants still get in with the wild card. Don't worry.
Well, Jalen Hurts
wins the division, dude, pulls home the hardware.
That was one of my
70 to one.
Yeah. I love
all right. So first of all, again, criteria quarterbacks, right? Carson Wentz has gotten hurt before. The infrastructure is there everywhere else with the Eagles for him to be successful. So I think you would be doing yourself a disservice. The real money maniacs out there, who are, by the way, growing every day, would be doing themselves a disservice if they did not, as Colby so eloquently put it, sprinkled a little on the 70 to one, because they are sitting flush after that historic plus 20 and a half unit day in Madden Mayhem.
Kramer is just so on board in full tout mode. He even updated his Twitter bio to reflect his now tout status. That's when you know you've gone full tout. We need a tout intervention, Colby.
By the way, I nailed that so badly. I'm going to pull that as a clip immediately after the show.
And also, you're down 5 units to me. Ooh. You don't think you would go out of your way to want your clients to know.
Hold on. I was going to ask your permission before I put our personal debts out there, but I thought the next line would be down 5 units to at Sean T. Green.
All right, as long as the clients know your personal debt. So you're saying Jalen Hurts at 71, that's your long shot. Tua, your safer bet at 9 to 1.
I'm saying, why wouldn't you sprinkle again? What position's going to this year, especially? Is there a receiver that stands out to you that is going to a situation where they could go bonkers?
LaVisca Chenault because of Minshew mania.
All right, Colby.
Probably not.
throw out your crazy ass picks. What do you got here?
From the start, the one that I like J.K. Dobbins, and I like him in Baltimore. I think that offense is already, as you saw last year, it's running smoothly. And I think he comes to a great spot where he can get a lot of carries, and I know he's split
plus 2,200.
Yeah. I think the Dobbins play was the one that really stood out to me. And then I think you got to sprinkle someone Hurts, because if Wentz goes down, I think he is very capable. He's played in two offenses. Tua, what scares me, he's only played in that offense. You know what I mean? I mean, yeah, sure. Back in, we talked with June Jones back in high school, he played in a more, I guess, run and shoot offense, but we'll see how it transitions to go into Miami. It's going to be I think Hurts has an advantage on him by learning a different offense and by from an educational standpoint.
Well, and this guy, I think it's almost always a quarterback, but here's kind of my long shot. Justin Herbert. Again, maybe I'm just doing this because we saw him ball out in Madden Mayhem and put up 31 points and cover the plus 10 and a half against the Chiefs, who had 41. Justin Herbert is a quarterback. There's a lot of talent still on that Chargers team. Not amazing, certainly, but at plus 2,800, if they can just make a little bit of noise in that AFC West, I don't think they're going to win the division, but I mean, what were the Cardinals were what last year? 7-9. Like they weren't,
and considering they didn't block well for their quarterback. I think that's not a bad play.
28-1, a guy, what was he selected? Fifth overall?
Yeah.
Imagine getting the fifth overall pick at 28-1.
That's good.
Now, certainly there's a world where Tyrod starts, but who knows what's going to happen, especially in the AFC West. I could see them. Yeah, they were, or I'm just looking up the Cardinals record. They were
Chargers.
No. I was just going to say Kyler Murray. He was the quarterback on a team that went 5-10-1. If Herbert can come in, put up good numbers, they have decent receivers. They have Hunter Henry. Like I think they're going to still be competitive. If they can get to 7 or 8 wins in the AFC West, I think Herbert at 28-1 is a good bet.
I thought you were going to say the Gandy man,
Well, if you're going receivers again, which I'd probably advise against, because you have to have an insane year to win it as a receiver. Michael Pittman Jr. at 40-1 is is just pretty crazy.
Just updated my profile.
Okay.
It now says down 5 units to at Sean T Green hashtag Sim God.
That's a humorous deal.
And of course, Hal Mummy, new favorite drop of mine. All right, let's throw out some picks there for defensive rookie of the year.
Kramer. Can I throw one more offensive out? One just
sure.
Could you imagine a world where the Bills are really good this year and Singletary goes down? Right. He's a fragile back. They're going to have a back that puts up numbers this year. It could be Zach Moss, 50-1.
Yeah. It's not bad.
He didn't get a lot of carries in Madden Mayhem, so he's not high on my radar.
I do think he runs a lot tougher of this
on Madden Mayhem.
I mean, look, I like Singletary, but I do think he runs tougher than Singletary.
Singletary had a good year, but he isn't so locked in that nothing can happen and he can't be dethroned. They're going to give it to him as a hot hand.
I think Singletary gets hurt too. I think that's actually a decent snag for your portfolio, real money maniacs.
What are you doing on the defensive side of the ball, Kramer?
Defense is always kind of a crapshoot, right? Isn't it? I feel like of late we've seen the pattern of who won last year. Do we have a list of the historic winners? Does either
I'll
one
pull
of
that
you,
up.
Because I feel like the way that you target this position is you look for the guy that's going to either make the splash because he makes shitloads of tackles, right?
Yeah.
Fresh middle linebacker for a shitty team.
Yeah.
Fresh around the box.
It's hardly going to be, you know, like take Derek Brown, who got drafted by the Panthers, who I think might actually be the best defensive player in this draft.
But first thing you do is cross off the cornerbacks because cornerbacks struggle that first year.
Unless they somehow have a lot of pick sixes or something.
What's the breakdown?
So the past winners, I think you almost always have to go first round. Every once in a while you get a Darius Leonard who won in 2018, but for the most part it's guys in the first round. So Nick Bosa won it
in 2019.
Lattimore in 2017. So that was a cornerback. And then you got Joey Bosa,
pass rusher,
Marcus Peters. And then we go D line.
Aaron wrong,
pass rush.
Aaron Donald, Sheldon Richardson,
pass rush.
Keekly, Von Miller,
middle linebacker,
Ndamukong Suh.
All right,
Brian Cushing. Remember that guy?
What I'm hearing is you want to target the pass rusher. So Chase Young, the favorite at plus 200. That makes sense to me. I was prepared to throw Patrick Queen out there because I think he profiles as the kind of guy that could immediately get thrown into a Darius Leonard type conversation because he has some nice support around him and he's on the Ravens. For whatever reason, defensive players just look better on the Ravens in those purple and black.
But young, I mean, that D line's so loaded, you think that he has an advantage of being on that. Even if you want to say he's the weakest link on that D line, you should be able to have success because I don't think they're going to try to double you right away.
No, definitely not. But you coming back to the points of what we just learned, right? What do we hear a lot of? Real disruptors up front.
Yeah.
And I think the guy that I circled because he's 22-1 is a guy that's going to be a centerpiece for Matt Rule's defense. And that's Derek Brown.
But they didn't give money. I don't think he caught one defensive tackle. Which is
Sue
Donald.
Guys who can be a disruptor. And I think Derek, one of the things we talked about during draft prep was Derek Brown could be a disruptor. And it's not often
absolute stud.
And it's not often you see those guys fall out of the top three. And this just was a weird year with the way the draft fell. And he was able to fall to Matt Rule. And I think if there's one thing you can say objectively about Matt Rule is I think everyone expects his defense going to be ready to play.
Yeah.
He drafted a lot of guys that he like basically formed the spine of his defense. So I think at 22-1, you can do a lot worse.
I like that play.
Than taking Derek Brown there. Sean, what are you doing?
Well, Derek Brown was on my list and I was going to give him
a second guy.
I'll let you start out there. I'm going to go with a guy, Willie Gay Jr. Chiefs drafted him. You're talking about a linebacker.
I knew Sean was going to go Gay.
Hey, not that there's anything wrong with that. Willie Gay, though, I like taking a guy from the SEC, and I think it'll be easy to stand out on the Chiefs. I mean, you saw some of the guys they had in those playoff games, like Sorensen and some of these guys that were pulling out tackles for them. If he's a day one starter, which a linebacker, it's realistic. You could be a day one starter. You get a bunch of tackles, you make a couple plays on special teams. And if the Kansas City Chiefs defense just gets a little bit better, I think people notice that and give Willie Gay a lot of credit for it at he's plus 2000. I really like that. So yeah, give me Willie Gay Jr. Go into that Spags defense. I think he could get a couple of blitzes, a couple sacks. Colby, what are you doing?
I'm liking, I think the Browns not a bad option, but I will say I like Kenneth Murray going to the Chargers. I think there's great value in that. The Chargers already have a loaded defense. So I think, the only bad thing is he's probably not going to be on national TV too much.
He could eat tackles though. LA market. I do like that play. The other guy I like, and I'm sticking with this mold, disruptor, and that's Kinlaw.
Oh, that was my other one. Yeah.
Out of South Carolina. Same similar price point, 18-1. This guy, complete opposite scenario to Mr. Derek Brown, who's going to a brand new defense to be the centerpiece. He is replacing the former centerpiece to a very, very good defense. There is going to be endless opportunities for him to show out.
It's almost like the Chase Young thing.
And, but the difference with Chase Young is I think when you're the first, Chase Young is in the situation of being the first defensive player taken. And
more of a target, you think?
I think there's more of a chance for him to be disappointing because the bar is higher. I think Kinlaw or Derek Brown are enough.
A little under the radar, but enough talent, both SEC guys. So they went up against SEC linemen.
What are you saying with it?
Well, I mean, SEC offensive linemen. No, I mean, Colby, I know you hate the SEC, but like,
I don't hate them. They got Mike Leach in there.
Their offensive lines are much better than the rest of the college lines. They just are. I mean, that's why I don't trust SEC skill players a lot of the times because they're playing behind these great offensive lines and it's easy to dominate. So if you're making noise as a defensive lineman, you definitely go up and Kinlaw, he's going to be playing next to Bosa. Like he's going to be playing against guys who are going to get a lot of doubles. Yeah. So
who is the guy that's going to surprise people? Like, who's the dark horse?
I'll say the one that I don't know what to expect is Jordan Brooks, the linebacker from Texas Tech. I thought he went really early. I thought earlier than a lot of people had him penciled in.
Is he even on the board over at my bookie?
No, I don't see him.
No.
There. I mean, he was still a first round draft pick. So you got to think that Carroll must have saw something he liked. I know they don't have the best track record after the Rashad Penny pick. But that one is the one that to me, like, I have no idea what to expect.
Here's what I would say. I think one of the reasons corners can get this, now that I'm going to pivot and justify why corners showed up on the historical look back, in the right situation, you can be targeted a lot and you have opportunity to make those splash plays.
Well,
you make the pick sixes, you get the interceptions. Yeah. You're probably still going to get burnt a lot and you're probably going to still have a nice highlight reel of you getting toasted. But if I look at a defense that has the structure around him and has talented cornerbacks around him to take some of the pressure off, it's Jalen Johnson in Chicago. He's got Kyle Fuller there. The take.
Love that pick, and he dropped. Man, he was supposed to go in the first round.
55. Yeah. I thought he was going to be a first rounder. I mocked him the first round. He went in the second. He's going to have opportunities. Look, he's got Khalil Mack and those boys rushing for him. He's got Kyle Fuller on the other side to scare quarterbacks to him. If he can just
he's got who?
Kyle Fuller.
No, Jalen Johnson.
Is he not on the Bears?
You're right. Kyle Fuller. Okay. I thought you meant on the offensive side of the ball. Okay.
No, I'm saying he's not the number one corner. He's not being asked to go out there and shut down number ones. And most likely quarterback's going to be more likely to attack him because he's a rookie. He's going to have opportunities in that defense is the point.
Yeah.
So Jalen Johnson at 55-1.
Well, he's especially goes up against Kirk Cousins twice a year.
Again, these rookie of the year.
You like that.
These prop bets. I mean, offense, I think. I think we're, you know, the favorite coming out more often than not. I would have to imagine if we looked back on some of these props for the defense, we're seeing like definite some obvious favorites winning there, but also like some guys who maybe aren't the favorites.
What about Jeff Gladney with the Vikings going into a pretty good defense?
Yeah,
from TCU, played with Gary Patterson, which always, you know, for the defensive backs, I feel like that's always a good thing.
Here's a guy that's on the list, insane long shot of the guys that are like over 50-1. He's the guy like Curtis Weaver. He's a sack machine out of Boise State going to that Miami defense. He's drafted in the fifth round, which means you're probably throwing money away, putting him in the mix for defensive rookie of the year. But the guy had 47.5 sacks in college.
But here's why you're not. That's one of those splash stats. If he as a rookie
gets 9 sacks,
like you probably just have to lead the rookie class. But if you have a splash year, like a la the Latimer year where he had a couple pick sixes, which I think is why he probably won
strip sack,
you get 9 or 10 sacks. You're probably rookie of the year. Right?
AJ Epinesa with the Bills, he dropped. It's a guy that had first round value. The Bills defense is pretty decent. So I could see that working out.
That's actually a guy that is listed on my bookie. He's 30-1.
Yeah.
And yeah, I like the Bills defense, 30-1.
Yeah, it's a good defense, I think. And he was a first round value.
No talk of Xavier McKinney. You care to comment?
Well, I mean,
might not start.
Barely going to be on prime time.
He might not start.
I think they play what Brady wants. Brady will probably dissect him.
Most teams play a similar defense to what Bud Foster originated down there in Blacksburg with the three safeties. But there's a very real scenario where Julian Love is starting over. I know they really want to get McKinney in there, but he could not be the non-starter like we saw in Madden Mayhem. Sean.
Yes.
Thank you for participating in the Sports Gambling Podcast.
Awesome podcast. A great interview with Jim Moore Jr. We've been on a roll, a bunch of good interviews. Check out our boy, Hal Mummy, Nick Rolovich, June Jones, all those on the Sports Gambling Podcast feed. And give us a follow on Twitter at Gambling Podcast. We got some more sim casting that we'll be doing. We're talking about maybe doing college or maybe just plugging away doing some more Madden games, but hit us up if you want to see us call a particular thing. We're still in the efforts of finalizing those plans. But again, if you were one of the winners of Madden Mayhem, send in your claim prize, sportsgamblingpodcast.com/Madden. For the Sports Gambling Podcast, I'm Sean stacking the money green, and he is Ryan.
See you tomorrow, Sean
Kramer. Let it ride.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.